to another inspirational message from Pastors Dave and Jenny Gilpin. Dave and Jenny are the senior pastors of Hope City Church. For any more information or for any more resources, go to davegilpin.com.
Good, or is God just average? What is he? Is he good or is he average? He's an extraordinary God. And I'm believing something good happens to you. Everything in Hope City Church started when Jen and I flew over here like 25 years ago, and we landed at Heathrow Airport about, 5:55 in the morning, because all the planes from Australia arrive in the morning. And we had this little itinerary to do this little preaching tour. And I wasn't much of a preacher then, but someone had arranged it. And we stood there at Heathrow, and the person who was meant to pick us up wasn't there. And then we went to the phones, and we tried to phone up the number, and there was no response. And so we were kind of stuck there without knowing who was meant to pick us up, without any contact with the person. And it was like the very beginnings of everything was feeling like everything was going wrong. And so Jen and I prayed outside the telephone booth at Heathrow Airport, and a stranger came up to us and he said, "What's wrong?" And we said, "Well, the person who is meant to be picking us up isn't here." He said, where do you want to be going? And we said, "Well, we don't know, because you just arrived in England. We don't know where we're supposed to be going." And he said, "Oh, I'll take you somewhere." So we did a quick glance up and down, and I needed to get his credentials. And he said, "Listen, I'm a chauffeur." He said, my Jaguar is just over in the parking lot. He said, "I'm a chauffeur for a rich businessman. He came in an hour early. So I was sitting by the telephones, just killing time." Well, you and I know, because we've got faith, he wasn't just sitting by the phones and he wasn't just killing time. He was an angel sent by God to collect two missionaries on the beginning of the greatest adventure that we had ever seen in our entire lives. That we might have felt like we're in the wrong place at the wrong time, but we're in the right place. It's my message tonight. We're in the right place. We're the right people in the right place at the right time. You may feel like you're in the wrong place. You might feel like all hell's breaking loose. But there's an angel very close to you, brushing its angel wings upon you tonight, because you're not actually the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time. You're actually, you got my gist tonight? You're the right person in the right place at the right time. If you exercise the right faith, we're going to see the right breakthrough in the right life and see the right destiny come to pass in your lives. You're closer to the will of God than you could ever realize tonight. Thank you so much for coming here to the 5 p.m. service. Here's some other people that found themselves in the right place at the right time. If you travel back to Florence in Italy in 1466 and look through the window of an art studio, you'll see a 14-year-old Leonardo da Vinci nervously seated at the first day of his apprenticeship that launched the career of a genius. He was 14, but he was in the right place at the right time. If you travel forwards in time to 1746 to inner city London, stand on a cobblestone street and look through the window of a tavern, you'd see a tall, opinionated 33-year-old man called Samuel Johnson, claiming that he can complete a dictionary of the entire English language in 3 years. It actually took him 9 years. But he was in the right place at the right time in history. If you traveled to 1946 and boarded a train in the Himalayas traveling to Darjeeling, you would have noticed a nun called Teresa, who was working as a schoolmaster, her eyes opening as she received a revelation from God to go to the poorest of the poor and surrender her life to it. And she ended up in the slums of Calcutta, yet smack bang, in the midst of poverty, but she was in the midst of the will of God. In the midst of brokenness, but she was in the midst of the will of God. We swing by Alabama in 1955 in December the 1st and look through a window of a bus, your eyes will be transfixed upon a black woman called Rosa, arguing with the bus driver, refusing to give a seat up for a white passenger. In so doing, the name Rosa Parks has become synonymous as the first lady of civil rights. She was on the right bus. She was sitting on the right seat at the right time to create history. If we made a quick voyage across the Atlantic and crossed the Golden Gate Bridge to North San Francisco in 1986, we'd find Steve Jobs, recently sacked from the head of Apple Corporation, sitting opposite George Lucas, creator of the Star Wars franchise, signing a deal to buy the computer graphics division of Lucasfilm for $10 million. He renamed it Pixar. 9 years later, Toy Story was revealed. 11 years later, Pixar, that was bought for $10 million, was sold to Disney for $7.4 billion. And he's become Disney's largest single shareholder. He wasn't in anybody's office. He was in George Lucas's office. He was in the right place at the right time. Let's take the TARDIS to the Mega Center in 2017 in October and look through the windows, a room full of Da Vinci's, a room full of Johnson's, a room full of Teresa's, a room full of Rose's, and a room full of Steve's, a room full of those called by God, a room full of those chosen by God, a room full of those hand selected by God, a room full of people walking out their God-given destiny. Not by accident, but driven and led by the power of the Spirit of God, created by God, positioned by God for such a time as this. City shapers, nation changers. The problem with us is we feel so ordinary, but that's our problem because none of us are ordinary. All of us are extraordinary, extraordinarily placed in time in the 21st century, extraordinarily placed in the body that you're in today. It's by the hand of God because everything's been worked out by God before time began. You are sons and daughters of God led by the Spirit of God, born for this generation, perfectly placed, perfectly timed, perfectly imperfect, and perfectly rising up for such a time as this. We're in a crucible of destiny, a seat of destiny, on the bus of purpose, and we're not giving this seat up for anyone. For no niggling voice, for no opposition, for no spirit of rejection, for no spirit of inferiority. We're not giving up our lives for anything else. We're not trying to be anybody else. We're not trying to copy anybody else. We're trying not to be envious of anybody else. We've got one life to live, one purpose to live, one dream to live, one destiny, one call, chosen by God. This is what it says magnificently about you in the Bible. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse number 9, it says that no eye has seen. It says no ear has heard. It says that no mind has conceived what God has promised for those who love Him. That no one can imagine the plans and the purposes that He has for you. It's not average, it's not mediocre, it's extraordinary, it's exceptional, it's divinely planned. Everything comes together. What you see about God, He's doing 900 things that you can't see about God in order to bring His plans and His purposes to pass within your life. And this is what the Bible says in Colossians chapter 1, verse 13, that He rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of His Son. The message says that God rescued us from dead-end alleys and dark dungeons, and He set us up in the kingdom of His Son. This today is a setup. This 5 p.m. service, you sitting where you're sitting and sitting with the person you're sitting next to, it's a stitch up from God. No eye has seen, no ear has heard what God has planned and prepared for those who know that they're the right person in the right place at the right time. Satan wants you to become another person and wants you to imitate somebody else's plan, somebody else's call, somebody else's body. But if you can be comfortable and love the skin you're in and realize that I am chosen, this is destiny. I'm in the right place at the right time with the right strengths, with the right imperfections, with the right non-strengths, with the right history, then all destiny sits at your feet. No eye has seen, no ear has heard what God has prepared for those who love Him. The most understated verse in the entire Bible is a verse written about Naomi. And she lost a husband and she decided to follow her mother-in-law back into poverty. And so in poverty, she had nothing to eat, so she was scratching away at some guy's field, at the grain that was left over. And it just so happened to be Boaz's field. And Boaz just so happened to become her future husband. And she just happened to become the great-grandmother of King David, of the line of Jesus. But this is what the Bible says about her. As it turned out, in Ruth chapter 2, verse number 3, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz. As it turned out. That's the greatest understatement in the entire Bible, as it turned out. As it turned out, you just happened to be here tonight in October in 2000. As it turned out, you just happened to be married. You happened to be single. You happened to be, as it turned out, you happened to be you. This is a stitch up. This is a setup from God. In 2005, Steve Jobs gave an open-air address at Stanford University, and he said this. He said, your time is limited. Mm-hmm. So don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by the dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of other people's opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most importantly, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. You kind of know in yourself there's a sense of significance. There's a sense of destiny. And the more you draw into that, the more powerful your life will become. The more you zero in on the destiny that God has for your life, the more you accept and celebrate who you are, the more effective you become. You need to wake up in the morning, draw a circle around yourself, and throw a party. Bake yourself a cake. Put on, I don't know. Do a little dance, do a little jig, get down tonight and celebrate the fact that you are fearfully and wonderfully made. Everything starts from that. I'm cutting against the spirit of this generation, which is the spirit of rejection. The spirit of rejection is your greatest enemy. It makes you reject you. And the moment you reject you, you become entirely powerless for God. You become restless. You become rootless. You move from town to town, from place to place. You move from friendship base to friendship base. You move from one image to the next image because you are riddled by self-rejection. It's the greatest epidemic of our age today. And the greatest remedy is celebration to your rejection. To say, I will not reject myself or be envious of others, but I am called by God, chosen by God, hand-selected by God for such a time as this, and I'm here to maximize my set of God-given opportunities. That's your power force. That's what I'm speaking into tonight. This is how detailed God is from the 13th century, that's the 1200s, until now. Each of us have had 2.5 million ancestors. Each ancestor of yours, listen clearly, avoided early death by plague, early death by accident, early death by war. Every ancestor of yours avoided early death by famine. They were kept alive because God believed in your destiny. Like you might think they've got a destiny. Yes, they've got a destiny, but they were kept alive for your destiny. That you are a part of a supernatural group of people. The chances of you being alive today are almost zero, if not by the hand of God. You've been hand-selected by God throughout the course of history to be here tonight. It's not by luck that you're here. It's evident the hand of God has been upon every ancestor of yours. When people have died before the age of child rearing, that is the end of their family line. but not one person in the entirety of your family line died before the age of child rearing. Because God has a destiny for you. So I'm going to say two things. The second one's longer than the first one, but it's good. Firstly, for everyone in this room, because destiny in your life right now is untouched, that it's not too late, it's not too early to do great things for God. It's not too late, it's not too early to do outstanding things for God, to become a legend for God. At 13 years of age, Michelangelo started his apprenticeship in sculpturing. And Mozart got his knighthood from the Pope. At 17 years of age, Henry VIII became king. At 18 years of age, Tutankhamun died after having reigned in Egypt. It's like a history lesson, isn't it? Reigned in Egypt for 9 years. 20 years of age, Bob Dylan released his first album. At 27 years of age, Walt Disney invented Mickey Mouse. 28 years of age, Colonel Gaddafi took control of Libya. In 1854, at 18 years of age, the alarming conditions endured by the soldiers of the Crimean War were reported to the press, which prompted Florence Nightingale to go and start what is the current nursing movement. At 36 years of age, Mozart died. At 39 years of age, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. At 43 years of age, JFK became president. At 62 years of age, Walt Disney produced Mary Poppins. At 76 years of age, Winston Churchill became prime minister for the second time. You haven't missed it. No eye has seen, no ear has heard. You haven't missed it. You're not too early, you're not too late. Let me suggest you bang on time. This train is bang on time. It might have a sign saying delayed. It's bang on time. It might be that the person isn't there to pick you up at your Heathrow, but it's perfect. They are bang on time. Because there's an angel. There's angel wings. There's the destiny. There's the Holy Spirit. There's the plans of God that He planned before time began, ready to operate in your life to those that could kick rejection back to hell. And those that can stand and say, I'm the right person, in the right place, at the right time, and I'll have no other life. This is the greatest life that I could live. You haven't missed it, you haven't blown it, you haven't been disqualified from it. The seed of destiny is still there for you. You might never become a general, you might be a foot soldier to a general, but we're not here to be important, we're here to be significant. You're here for significance. No one might ever know your name, but you can be significant, changing the course of history with the decisions that you make. And here's my second point, the largest point. And it's from Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11, and it says this. It says, the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all. You think life's to the brilliant. You think life's for the intelligent. You think life's for the strong. You think life's for those with incredible DNA. You think life's for those who are incredibly talented. But the Bible says life's not for those people. Life is for people who take their chances. And people who take their chances are people who believe they're the right person, the right place at the right time, with the right opportunities. Time and chance happen to each person. And the people that great make something great about their lives are not the most talented people on earth. But the ones who are most motivated. Because time and chance, the time to take chances, happen to every person. You're a custodian of a very unusual set of divine circumstances. And your job in life isn't to imitate somebody else's unique set of divine circumstance, but to maximize, to take time, to take chances, to maximize your custodianship of your unique custodianship of a very unusual set of divine circumstances. You know, a number of years ago, like I did some painting. And if you know me, I've got no talent to paint. Like, if you've seen my paintings, I'm talentless. But I'm not timeless. I've got time. I'm not chanceless. I take chances. And so I moved into a la-di-da house a number of years ago. So I thought it needs la-di-da paintings. And so I thought IKEA is not good enough, even though there's a huge celebration at the moment in Sheffield, which is quite weird. IKEA, it's only IKEA that's come to town. I remember living in a town of 5,000 people and KFC came and it was a day-long celebration. I was there for about 2 or 3 hours. I just went down to the works and I bought some cadmium red and another colour. I bought some stretched canvas and I just spread. I forgot to buy a paintbrush. I was such lacking in talent and expertise. I just spread the cadmium red. Jen walked past. She said, "Stop, Dave." I said, "What?" She said, "I'm going to call you Michelangelo from now on. It's just amazing what you've done." And it was like a three-year-old just smeared cadmium red just over the white canvas. But anything on stretch canvas looks pretty good. Anything framed looks brilliant. So I stopped. I painted 40 pictures just in that 1 week. And I don't have 40 walls. And so I had to bring them down to the mega center when we had a lot of business people coming through and I started to sell them. Amongst the mockery, like there wasn't one staff member that didn't mock me, saying that a six-year-old could have painted this. And it disturbed me because I thought it looks very much like even a sane six is a credit because it just looks so talentless. But it was up on the wall. And I started to tell, I felt guilty doing this, but I realized that the bigger the price tag, the more confident you are, the more people bought it. And so I was selling paintings, like £250 for a painting. I sold a painting with just a dot on it. And another painting with a drip on it. It took me longer to sign my name Degate, than it did to do the drop and the drip, but I sold both of them for £400. I got no talent. But I've got unusual confidence. I ain't got talent, but I took a chance. That's the difference between you and me. You're obsessed by talent. You're mesmerized by talent. You're mesmerized by people's abilities. But those who truly break through in this world are not the most talented people. They're the most confident people who take their chance while time permits. Because the race isn't to the swift. It's not to the wise. It's not to the gifted. It's not to the Mensa. It's to the confident. It's not what you've got that counts. It's what you do with what you've got that counts. I'll say that again, because that's a life-changing expression. It's not what you've got that counts. So stop counting what you've got. That's the problem with the guy with the one talent. So I've only just got one talent. What am I going to do with it? Bury it. Well, welcome to your life. The guy who had five had a level of confidence. He got five more. The one who had two got two more. The one who had one did nothing with it. And so if it was the landscape of destiny in people's lives, it started off 5-2-1, and then it moved to 10-4-1, and then God took the one from the one who had the one that did nothing with it, and the topography was now 11-4-0. Because life has nothing to do with what you've got and everything to do with what you do with what you've got. The only difference between me and a talented painter is my paint box is open for business. There's a book, a successful British book called Bounce, and it was written by a successful... three times Commonwealth Games champion, table tennis champion, and his name was Matthew Syed. And when he started writing the book, because he thought three times Commonwealth Games champion, he thought, let's puff up myself here. Let's bring it back down to sheer talent. And so this was his initial first chapter. that he came from an ordinary town, no silver spoon, no nepotism, no special treatment, yet pure talent and sheer guts, I triumphed against the odds. And then when he really looked at it, he thought, that's a complete lie. He realized that there was five unusual circumstances surrounding his life. And so he rewrote the book. He called it Bounce, and these were the five unusual circumstances that he had covered up in his initial draft. He said, number one, when he was 8 years of age, his parents bought him a full-size tournament table tennis table. Why? He didn't know. Number two, his parents had a house with a garage that could fit a full-size tournament table tennis table. Well, how many houses in this room, how many garages in this room have we got that can fit a full-size tournament table tennis table that you can actually play on? No one has a garage that big in Great Britain. Number three, he had an older brother, not too much older, that he'd be off going to university while his brother was at home like a single child, but not too much younger, just a bit older. And when you're just a bit older, they had table tennis tournaments where Matthew could practice his skill and practice his strength and get better and better and better and better because he had an older brother that wasn't too much older and wasn't younger. Number four, the sports teacher at his primary school, Mr. Charters, was the nation's top coach in table tennis. There you go. And number five, there was a table tennis table near his house open 24 hours a day. He was going to say it's by talent. Then he realized it was by chance. He was going to say it's by gifting. Then he realized it's by opportunity. Yeah. Every one of you are a custodian of an unusual set of God-given opportunities. Opportunities. You take your opportunities, you build destiny, and your destiny is no eye has seen, no ear has heard what God has chosen. He lived at 119 Silverdale Road. Matt's brother went on to win three national junior titles. At 274 Silverdale Road, Karen Witt won Commonwealth Gold. At 149 Silverdale Road, Andy Wellman was a hugely successful doubles player. At the bottom of Silverdale Road, Paul Trott was a leading junior. Around the corner from Silverdale Road, Jimmy Stokes was English junior champion. Alison Gordon was four times English senior champion. Sue Collier was English schools champion. There's more table tennis stars, more sporting stars in one street than any other street in the entire nation. May I suggest you live on Silverdale Road? It's just you've covered the sign up. In your inferiority, in your wanting to be somebody that you're not, in your false comparisons with somebody else's destiny, you've put canvas over the sign. And tonight, I suggest you take the cover off and realize you're as much a custodian as Matthew Syed and his cohorts were custodians, that you live in a very special street, in a very special road, in a very special suburb called personality, in a very special region called your history, that nobody else is like you. And what God needs isn't another Moses. He doesn't need another Wigglesworth. He doesn't need another Gilpin. He needs you for such a time as this.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Bit of clapping's good. Helps me out. Let me say something that's slightly controversial, but I would say it's true, and that's that Usain Bolt's not the fastest man in the whole of human history to run the shortest amount 100 meters. It's just that he's the fastest man in recorded history. But you know, if you know anything about DNA, Usain Bolt is from West Africa. He's got the same DNA as West Africa. I would suggest that there's 10,000 people in West Africa that could run as fast as Usain Bolt. The difference isn't talent. The difference is opportunity. When you're born in West Africa, you're not born near a running track. You're born near survival. When you're on a tropical island, survival's not a problem. When Usain Bolt was born, he was born onto a running track. I made that up, but you know where I'm coming from. He was born in the midst of opportunity when everybody else with the same DNA base didn't have that opportunity. And so sometimes we give credit to the wrong things, thinking how talented is Usain Bolt? He's worked hard. He's maximized his God-given opportunities. But he's not the world's greatest boxer, because boxing wasn't his opportunity. He's the world's fastest runner because running is his opportunity. Running is his Silverdale Road. And there's a Silverdale Road for every person in this place right now, because you're a custodian, an unusual set of divine circumstances. Your age, your background, your ability, your disability, your advantages, your disadvantage have all placed you on Silverdale Road. No one is like you. Even Steve Jobs, he grew up in Mountain View, just south of San Francisco in the heart of Silicon Valley. Did you? That's why Steve Jobs is Steve Jobs. Because he grew up, he worked for HP, Hewlett Packard. He knew the boss of Hewlett Packard. So he's able to get some experience with Hewlett Packard. That's because he's a custodian. But I don't know what part of your San Francisco you're brought up on. But there's something magical about where you've been brought up. There's something incredible. There's something starry-eyed about your life. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs were both born in 1955. You have to have been born in 1955 to be Bill Gates. Because if you're born in 1950, you would have already chosen a career when computers started to come into American schools. But he was just the right age. If he was born in 1960, he wouldn't be allowed out of the house to practice computing. He was at the right age, 14 years of age, to ride his bicycle to the local computer center. The age you were born is the right age for you. When Steve Jobs was sacked by Apple in 1985, this is what he said, and I'm pulling this in now. He said it was the best thing that ever happened to him. He said, that's part of my custodianship, being fired. You think it's part of your bad luck. He said, this is part of my good luck. You thought this is part of your misfortune. He said, this is part of my fortune. He loved his sacking because it propelled him. He said the heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again. It freed me to enter into one of the most creative periods of my life. And then he went on, this is the outcome. This is the outcome of your life, right? He went on to create the greatest animation studio the world has ever seen. That's kind of like your life. It might not be animation, but it's something brilliant. And he invented Toy Story, A Bug's Life. Just smile when you think this is your favorite, because I'm going to go through a list. Monsters, Inc. Finding Nemo. The Incredibles. Cars. Here's my favorite. Up. I didn't like the dogs in it, though. I thought the dogs were stupid. And Toy Story 3. Some say the best. Bought it for $10 million, sold it for $7.4 billion. Same man bought it as the same man who sold it. He didn't change. He just grew confident. He's standing in a junction in history. Same with you. I'm going to have a very quick altar, because some of you are so struck by rejection. put too many selfies up because you don't actually like who you are. You're trying to get approval from everybody else saying, aren't you beautiful? Because you don't think you're beautiful. It's about time you stop putting selfies up and you realize I am actually the apple of God's eye, the center of God's will. I'm actually fearfully and wonderfully made. It's about time you put on confidence. You're perfect. Your hair color, your accent, your height, your history, your skin color. Okay, I'm going to finish on a story. And this story is a story about a stonecutter. It'll seem like the story is going on forever. It quickly finishes. So in the point where you're thinking, and you're going to think, this story is going on forever, right? It's about to finish. Okay, so sit up when you feel like daydreaming. Once upon a time, change in music. Lean back or lean forward, whatever you do as a child when daddy is telling you a story. Sounds creepy, that, but we'll eradicate that from the recording. Very creepy. Once upon a time, there was a stone cutter. Every day he traveled to work and back again. He was very happy. One evening on his way home, he passed the richest man's house in the village and looked through the window. And peering through the window, he could see beautiful chandeliers and soft couches. And he said, oh, I wish that I was the richest man in the village, sighed the stone cutter. And an angel came and said, so be the richest man. And he was. And he lived in the finest situation and ate the most expensive food and slept on the sweetest mattress you could find. He was very happy. Then one day a prince passed in a golden carriage with a canopy over his head drawn by four beautiful white horses. Ah, I wish that I was the prince, sighed the stonecutter. An angel came down and said, so be the prince. And he was the prince. And he rode around in the carriage and lived in the finest of lives. And he was very happy. Then one day he looked and felt the sun's rays beating on his head. And he said, that sun is more powerful than me. I wish I was the sun. And an angel came and said, so be the sun. So he was the sun. And he beamed down upon the world. And he was very happy. And he was very powerful. He was very strong. Then one day he looked down and saw a cloud blocking his rays from the earth. And he said, that cloud is more powerful than me. I wish I was the cloud. And an angel came and said, so be the cloud. And he was. He blocked the sun's rays and made the earth dark and was very powerful and very, very strong, but very, very happy. Then one day a strong wind came and blew the clouds away. That wind, he cried, is more powerful than me. I wish I was the wind. And an angel came and said, so be the wind. And so he was, and he blew across the world, and everything was shaken by his power, except for a cliff. It stood strong and resolute in the face of the wind. That cliff is more powerful than I, he said. I wish I was the cliff. And an angel came and said, so be the cliff. And he was, and he felt very, very strong, very, very powerful, was very happy. Then one day, as the cliff, he felt a tickling at his feet. A stone cutter was slowly but surely chipping him away. You're the stone cutter. Stop trying to be the sun. It doesn't suit you. Stop trying to be the wind. It only looks more powerful. The most powerful you is you, maximizing your unique set of divine circumstances and divine opportunities. I'm just about to pull it in. I'm going to have the quickest altar in the world because it's for you to break the spirit of rejection that constantly self-hate has plagued you, has caused you to pretend that you're the rich man, pretend that you're the sun, pretend that you're a cloud. You're a stone cutter. And this is going to be a liberation altar. It only needs to take a second because God hasn't given you the spirit of fear. He's given you the spirit of love and power and a sound mind. That's what's going to come upon you, is an unusual confidence. Open up your paint set and start to paint. I'll finish with this example that I use a lot of times when I preach. And it's from sport. And if you see long distance running, Kenyans usually come first and second and third and fourth. Maybe an Ethiopian sneaks in there, sneaky Ethiopians. And then Kenyan comes fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth. And when they study, because you think DNA plays a big part in life, right? But nobody's won a medal from southern Kenya or from eastern Kenya. Only a couple from middle Kenya. But over 90% of every medal, world medal, has come from someone that lives within 60 miles of a town called Eldoret. Now, if you're on my wavelength now, you realize, gosh, it's not talent-based. Well, it's not, because in the Rift Valley, schools are like miles apart, maybe 10 miles apart. And so a child who's 6 years of age puts a satchel on, he looks at the distance, thinks, I'm not walking it. I'm running it. So he runs it. He runs an hour and a half a day. Runs like 9 hours a week. Runs 500 hours a year. He's run 10,000 hours before his 16th birthday. So some white British kid on his PS2 wants to compete in the Olympics against that. Give up now. You've got the wrong custodianship. And it's high altitude, blood's thick. But you know the real reason for their champion spirit is because of poverty. The schools are only far apart because of poverty. Without poverty, they're like Britain. They're like half a mile apart. Poverty is part of their unusual set of divine circumstances. All the difference between you and me is you complain about your poverty, they've maximized it. They might not have eliminated it, but they've conquered it. They've conquered it with a spirit and an acceptance. I can either cry about the poverty of the Rift Valley, or I could conquer it by running it. And through running it, they've become champions of the world. And when you look at the way God works, He builds our greatest strengths upon the greatest fault lines. He builds your greatest strengths on areas of your greatest personal weaknesses. It's just you ought to own those weaknesses and realize that every fracture in your spirit is an opportunity to build a skyscraper of greatness, to dominate your skyline, to change planet Earth through the shadow of the skyscraper built on the fault line of weakness.